Yeah, I'd like first of all to thank Timothy Akers for putting this together and for including a ceasefire along with it. Well, first of all, as you see from the slide, Cure Violence. Ceasefire is now known by the name Cure Violence. We've rebranded ourselves, and the point of rebranding ourselves was to choose a name that more placed us in the field of public health. We see ourselves as a public health approach to violence prevention, and so we wanted a name that reflected that, and Cure Violence is that name. So what I'm going to be talking about today is the basis of the Cure Violence model. And that basis is that violence is a disease. Not that violence is like a disease, but violence is actually an infectious disease. And so I'm just going to walk through that concept a little bit with the remainder of time that I have right now. So the starting point for reconsidering violence is that there are really only two things in the history of mankind that have killed tens of millions and hundreds of millions of people. And that is the great infectious diseases of the world, things like leprosy, cholera, smallpox, and violence, including war. These are the things that have overwhelmed us. These are the things that we have not been able to, that have killed so many people. And this picture is plague depicted. It was estimated to have killed 75 million people. And here's a list of some of the major infectious diseases. Now, these diseases, plague, smallpox, they've generally been put into the past. We've generally overcome these diseases. Most people think that we've overcome these diseases because of general progress. We've just generally progressed as a society. But that's not true. It has not been general progress. It has been because of discovery, scientific discovery. These were figured out. We figured out the causes of the disease using science. And then using science, we figured out the solution to these diseases. At the time that we were going through these diseases, people thought that this was just something you have to live with. It was a fact of life. They did not imagine that we could put these into the past ever. The people that were infected with these diseases, they were called morally bad people. They were blamed for their disease. The communities that were affected by these diseases, they were avoided. They were called bad areas. Why did this happen? Why did we make these moral judgments on these people and these communities? Well, it's because we did not really understand what was causing these diseases. It was, take plague for instance. Plague was a bacterium that was inside a flea, that was inside a rat. At that time, who could have imagined something like that would have existed? The discovery started with this man, Anton van Leeuwenhoek. He created one of the first microscopes, and he first started seeing the microbiology. And so we first started to understand that there was another world that we had not known about before. He made his discovery in 1675. Another 100 years went by until we started making more advancements, vaccinations. Edward Jenner, he discovered that cowpox could be used to vaccinate against smallpox. But even then, we didn't understand a lot of what was going on. A lot of the things that Edward Jenner wrote about were wrong. We were just beginning to understand it. It was a new field. Another 100 years went by in the 1870s, and people like Louis Pasteur, as well as Edward Koch, we began to understand what was really going on. We began to understand what was causing these diseases. So it was not general progress. It was discovery by men like this. That is what led us to being able to overcome these diseases. And this was the culprit. This is the plague. Not bad people, but this bacterium was responsible for the diseases. Once we understood this, then we could start to understand how we could deal with it. So it was scientific understanding followed by a scientific approach to solving the problem. This offered the solution to treating these diseases, and this is what will also offer the solution to treating violence. Violence is something that can be overcome if we understand it scientifically and if we approach it scientifically. Now, to start to explain how we see violence as an actual infectious disease, let's look at the characteristics of diseases. First, starting with the contagious diseases and population. There's really three characteristics of contagious diseases in populations: clustering, spread, and transmission. Let's start with clustering. Clustering is where the cases of the disease cluster in certain geographic areas. So here we have a depiction of cholera epidemic in Bangladesh. The black dots are water sources. The gray areas are where the cases of cholera were concentrating. So you see definite clustering of this disease. We have the same type of clustering with violence. Here we have depiction of violence in Chicago. These are shootings and killings. So they're clustering around hotspots. And the reason why these hotspots exist are a variety of reasons. But they are places where violence is spread. Second characteristic, spread. There's a couple different ways of thinking about spread. But the first is that it's a non-linear spread. So here we have killings in the U.S. We have a non-linear spread of the disease. And there's several waves. There's waves upon waves. So we have increases at several different points in time. But spread can also be thought of as geographic and temporal. So let's look, first of all, temporal. These are killings in Rwanda. You see a large non-linear increase. And then there's a secondary increase. Well, that secondary increase was when a population was hiding out and they were found and they were killed a few days later. You see a very similar type of spread in diseases. Here's cholera. There's a large increase, and then you see also that secondary peak. Secondary peak was when a population that was not in the camp where the cholera was spreading came into the camp, and then we had a bunch of new cases. So similar types of situations. You can also look at spread geographically. Here are the UK riots that happened last year. You had a single event that started off the riots, and then over time, over several days, you had it spreading across the country. So you see a geographic spread of this violence. Third characteristic, transmission. This is basically how it spreads from one individual to another. And this is where I'll be spending most of the rest of my time, so we can understand exactly how this disease spreads, which makes it an infectious disease. So basically the concept is this. We have violence being exposed to an individual, and then that individual has an increased likelihood of contracting this violence disease. So exposure to violence increases the risk of perpetrating violence. This is much the same way that diseases work. So if influenza, TB, cholera, people can be exposed to it, and then they have an increased likelihood of contracting the disease. Now, it's important to point out that not everybody contracts the disease. There are a lot of cases where people are exposed to diseases, they never actually contract that disease. There are a lot of modulating factors, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But so we see clustering, spread, and transmission, all similar characteristics in both diseases and in violence as a disease. Now, getting a little bit more into transmission, let's look at contagious diseases in individuals. So the way that contagious diseases in individuals work basically is you have an intake of the disease, an exposure. With gastroenteritis, it's food or water, it's an oral transmission. You have intake, and then the disease is taken into the body and it's processed, and a person may or may not develop that disease. A lot of modulating factors determine whether or not a person exposed is somebody who will develop that disease, age, whether they have an immunity to the disease, what the exposure is like, how high the dose is, or what type of dose. For violence, we have much the same type of transmission, except instead of oral transmission, taking it orally, you take it in visually. You observe the violence, and that increases the risk that you will be infected with this disease. So similarly, whereas other diseases affect a certain organ of the body, the organ that's affected here is the brain. So you visually are observing the violence, and it affects your thinking. It affects how you will act and in the future. And there are a lot of modulating factors, a lot of the same modulating factors. Age, prior immunity, what kind of a violence that you're exposed to, the intensity of the violence, how often you're exposed to it. These all determine whether or not you contract this violence disease. So what actually goes on in the brain? How is it that if you're exposed that you start to take in this violence disease? Well, this is the area that we're just beginning to understand. This is a new area, understanding violence as a disease, and a lot of it is developing in the neurological sciences. But some of the things that we do know is that a lot of behavior, as we see in this picture, is picked up through modeling. Albert Bandura was one of the people who pioneered this research. But a lot of the behavior is we look at what other people are doing and we unconsciously take it in. And so that is how we adopt these behaviors. But there are also a lot of neurological processes that we're only beginning to understand, involving things like mirror neurons, where we see somebody behaving a certain way, and we are unconsciously, our brain is actually copying that behavior, and that helps us learn that behavior. And then there are other things involved. There are social norms involved. Here we have a picture that depicts a fight that's taking place in a schoolyard, and all the kids around there are observing this, and they're learning. The older kids are pointing out what's happening, and they're learning that this is how disputes are settled. So social norms reinforce these behaviors, and they reinforce what we are taught through modeling. And then in areas with chronic violence, it escalates to a high level. Here we have a bunch of individuals who, in some circles, might be labeled as bad people. But really, they are just in an environment of chronic violence, in an environment where the social norms encourage violence. And so when situations arise, they act out violently because that is what they've been taught to do, and that is how their brain has been affected. So we have exposure to violence leading to perpetrating of violence. Now I'm going to go a little bit more into this and talk about how this looks like in terms of a disease framework. So with diseases, what you have is you have a susceptible person, you have a moment of exposure, and then you have a variety of different outcomes that determine whether or not they develop the infection. So these possible clinical courses include death, you can have a chronic disease, you can have a cure or a relapse, you can intermittently show signs of the disease, and you could also just be a carrier where you never actually develop the disease. In diseases, the typical example of this is a typhoid Mary, who never actually developed the disease of typhoid, but she was thought to have infected dozens of people and was responsible for several deaths. This can also, all these cases, all these clinical courses also happen with violence. We have people that may not ever act violently, but they pick up the violent norms and they spread the violent norms. They encourage other people to act violently, even though they might not act violently. And then, of course, we have people who, because of the violence that they've taken in, they die, or they have a chronic disease where they are always acting violently. Now, when I'm talking about violence now, I'm talking, you know, pretty generally about violence. But there are a lot of different types of violence. There's gang violence and community violence. There's war. There's child abuse, family violence. I'm talking about violence generally because all of these violence types of violences really affect the brain in the same way. It's all the same disease, different forms of the same disease. So here's what it looks like in terms of exposure. All these different types of violence a person can be exposed to, but the outcome is the same. Even exposure through TV and through movies. There have been a lot of studies that have shown, Raul Houston is one of the people pioneering this area, who have shown that exposure to violence, even in TV, can increase your likelihood of perpetrating violence. And this is much the same way that diseases work. There are a number of different ways you can be exposed to disease. You can have direct contact, you could be exposed to a sneeze or cough, or you can be contaminated indirectly by an object. But they all result in the same disease. So just looking at how this works with individual types of violence, with child abuse, there have been a lot of studies that have shown that a victim of child abuse is more likely to be a perpetrator of child abuse. Some studies have said up to 30% of victims end up being perpetrators of child abuse. But it's not just child abuse that you're more likely to be a perpetrator of. You're also more likely to be a perpetrator of community violence or spouse abuse. The same is true with war violence. If you're exposed or a perpetrator of war violence, you're more likely to be a perpetrator of community violence and spouse abuse. So all these different types of violence are really related. And so here's the relationships of all the different types of violence, all interrelated, all feeding off each other, so that we just have these violent norms being taught and being modeled, and the end result is that violence is picked up by the individual. So there's a lot of different types of work that still needs to be done, a lot of things that need to be defined. We're just sort of trying to figure out exactly how violence works. And we're definitely putting a lot of definitions in place as we go along. So we're understanding that it's a visually a route of transmission. We're understanding that some of the things involved are observational circuits and reward pathways, limbic system disruption. And we're understanding some of the modulating factors, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done. This is where a lot of the work is left, where we need to really define this disease and figure it out scientifically so we can understand how to treat it. The cure violence model is one of the models that we have deployed to treat violence as a disease. And what we use here, you see, is a typical public health model. You'd use the same model to treat AIDS or to treat other infectious diseases, and this is what we use to treat violence as a disease. First, you interrupt transmission. You mediate the conflict so that the people aren't exposed to the violence. If they're not exposed, then they won't be affected. They won't observe the violence, and therefore they won't have an increased risk of perpetrating it. The people that have been exposed and are infectious, the ones that are committing violence, the highest risk people, you work with them individually. Just like you'd work with in HIV, you'd work with those people who are sexually transmitting the disease, you'd work with them to use condoms. Well, here you'd work with them to change the way they think about violence so that they won't use violence. And then you use community norms. In HIV work, you use community norms through public education to educate people. The same idea with violence. You use social pressure to change the norms to stop violence. Here are some of the effects of the Chicago program. Implementing cure violence, significant effects, large decreases in violence. So this approach has been very successful where it's been implemented correctly. Baltimore, similarly, a second evaluation of the same model being implemented. Again, there have been significant results and large decreases. So just reviewing, this is a new way of understanding violence, and that new way leads to treating it in new ways. We're understanding it as a contagious disease. It has the population and individual characteristics of that disease. We're just now starting to define the routes of transmission, the modulators, the mediators. But the important thing is that it can be treated like an infectious disease. It can successfully be treated. But there is a lot of work left to be done. But one of the overall messages is it's not bad people that we're dealing with. It's about norms and behavior. It's people that are being exposed to violence and are contracting this disease and are therefore acting violently. Just like the people that contracted smallpox hundreds of years ago weren't bad people, they are people that just happen to be in an environment where they are exposed to it. And finally, the last point is, it is solvable, and it's solvable using disease control methods. Here's my email if anybody would like to get in touch with me, and certainly after this presentation, I'm open to any questions.